listening to Barcelona Nights by Otmar Liebert and his album Nuevo Flamenco. And if you ever had any doubt that music can get inside you and make you move, that cut would certainly make you a believer. And that's what we're going to talk about on the show today: change, doubt, belief, trust. I'm Sherry Edwards, your host for the next hour, and I'm delighted that you could join us on VBS Radio for a bit of conversation designed to enlighten and inform you about options for self-health through sound health and vocal profiling. As usual, we have a few announcements before we start. For those of you who have sent in questions about the free online courses that we want to start in the next few weeks, about when, how, where, what's going to happen. Well, first, the one course we talked about was hearing and vocalizing your signature sounds and to listen to the otoacoustic emissions from your ears and a lot of people want to do it for increased meditation and awareness. So in answer to some of your questions, you'll be learning about new listening techniques and a bit about how your own signature sound can help you relax and allow your body and mind to heal itself. The other course online that we're doing is about vocal profiling and teaching you how to take your vocal print and make a report out of it. What we're going to use online is the nutrition program. So for both courses, you'll need to contact our office. That's 740-698-9119. By phone or soundhealth@soundhealth.org by email for information. You're going to need information about the computer specs, about how to download the programs that we're giving you for free here to do this course, how to download those before the course actually starts. You'll need a broadband connection. This will not work on a telephone line. It's just horrible and too hard to do it that way. We have to repeat things too many times. So any of you who want to participate in either one of those courses, just get in touch with us. And thank you for your questions. I enjoy hearing from all of you. Well, most all of you. The person who complained about high taxes and sound health, I'm still trying to figure out how sound can help reduce tax liabilities. I just don't know how to answer that email. Okay, in the first few shows that we did, I guess in all along all the shows, I've been asking at the end of the show for you to think about something. And one of the things I ask you to think about is, by what criteria do you consider yourself a success? And some people wrote in, I've done a little poll on my own about what's going on. I suggested things like your degree of success, how much money you have in the bank, how much power you have, what your neighbors think of you, what your children accomplished, how well people like you, what kind of car. I got all the different kinds of answers. But I want to combine that also with, who do you really trust for your information, for things that you choose to do? You know, it used to be that we trusted our medical doctors with our health. I don't think that we do anymore. Look at all the lawsuits that are going on. We used to trust news reporters. Walter Cronkite was the most trusted man in America. But that's not really true today. We don't trust much of anybody. Few people trusted their spouses. Some didn't trust their spouses at all. But our legal system that's here to protect us, we certainly don't trust it anymore. We don't trust our politicians to have integrity, and we don't trust the gas companies not to charge us and way more than they should, or way more than I think they should, and really to gouge us at the pumps when you look at some of the reports coming out showing that gas companies are making record profits and they're doing it on our backs. So we're going to weave all of this through the talk that we're going to have today with our very special guest, Bob Bethel. Bob's an attorney, an engineer, a pilot, a boat captain, a consultant. He has an incredible breadth of information, and he has a personal story to share with us and how he became involved in what we're doing in the research on sound and its effects on health and wellness. Bob, welcome to the show.
No, thank you, Sherry. It's good to be here.
You're much better at telling your story of how you became involved with us. Would you share that with our audience and let them become acquainted with your story and how that intermingles with what we do here at Sound Health Research?
Okay, I'll ramble a little bit. And I was a maritime attorney in Key Largo, Florida. In 1993, I had a very serious motorcycle accident. I should have allowed my intuition to have kept me from getting that motorcycle. I didn't want it, but somebody gave it to me, and on the way home with it, I had a collision with a truck. My leg was almost cut completely off. My pelvis was broken. I had 9 other broken bones. My stomach was ruptured. I was dying for about 4 days. I wasn't breathing. Pretty bad. So the doctors came in and said they were going to cut my leg off. And I said, I wish you wouldn't do that because I play tennis. And at the time, I was a sparring partner for a top 100 in the world tennis player, and tennis was very important to me. And they said, well, tennis is not in your future, we're cutting your leg off. So I told them I was an attorney, and they at that point decided they'd get me a second opinion. So the doctors came in, and I worked my way through the professors of microsurgery and such at the University of Miami Ryder Trauma Center. I had some very, very good surgeons decided that they could remodel my leg. They managed to save me. They took muscles out of my back. They took veins out of my back and made arteries. They took skin off of my body in various places. And it was like a bowling ball went through my leg and took everything with it, or a cannonball. The damage was that massive. There was probably 3 or 4 pounds of tissue just missing. But anyway, they saved my leg, and this was in 1993. In 1998, I decided to move back to where I was raised here in southern Ohio. And I still couldn't walk. I was using a cane every other day. One day I could walk without a cane. The next day the pain was such that I used a cane. But I still was thinking about tennis. And one night in a supermarket, ran into a man that had a t-shirt that referenced a local tennis club, and I said, well, I'd like to try playing tennis again, but you'd have to bear with me. You'd have to hit the ball right to me because I can only take one step one way and no steps the other way, and I kind of would hop on one leg, and if you could hit it to me, I could run you around a little bit. So we decided to do that, and while we were playing, he said, well, my wife could maybe help you with your leg. And I said, oh, she's a physical therapist. He says, no, not exactly. And I'd had my physical therapy, and I pretty much was as good as I was going to get. I had resigned myself to the fact that my recovery was over. This was by 1998, 5 years after the accident. The accident was early of 93, and this was middle of 98. And anyway, he told me what Sherry did, and that's what her theme on the show is tonight, is a little bit about credibility, believability, and such. So when he said Sherry can tell a lot of what's wrong with you by sound, and she can use sound to help your body establish itself into a healing modality, or your body wants to heal itself, and sometimes things just aren't lined up. And he started telling me all this, and I said, how about just hitting another ball? You know, I don't really want to hear about this. In other words, I didn't believe it. It sounded too incredible.
Come on, you call us names.
I think I said that the word hocus pocus, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, went up to Sherry and Bill's house, Bill being Sherry's husband. I went to their house after tennis, after we tried a couple times, and she could tell I was in pain, and she asked me about putting on sound. So I said, well, okay, and you know, I found the sound very pleasant. And I said, well, it's nobody's sticking needles in me, nobody's sticking tubes in me. What have I got to lose? It doesn't hurt, and if anything, it helps me sleep.
But let's back up just a minute. You didn't give me a vocal print at first because you were kind of stubborn about this. So I just kind of snuck sounds on for you. I want people to know about your skepticism here.
Okay. Well, yeah, if at the time, I think Sherry said, could I take a voice print? And I go, well, I don't have time. I need to get home or this and that. You know, I was trying to politely get out of it. But Sherry looked at my leg and through, I guess she'll have to tell you about that, how she knew what frequencies to play for me, but she played, snuck some frequencies on while I was there talking to Bill. Sherry put on sounds that, like I said, once again, they were very pleasant, but just in the background, very low, kind of a low rumbling type of thing. And I noticed when I left that night, I didn't have such severe pain. I was actually going down. The first couple times I played tennis, I went down the steps from their house on my butt, one step at a time. And then after playing the sounds, I found that I didn't have such intense pain, so I decided to give it a little further trial. So I took a tone-producing device home and put it on a subwoofer and played it for some period of time.
When we took your vocal print, and we only took like a 40-second sample, were you surprised when we could show you on your vocal print exactly what muscles were in stress?
Yes, not only my leg, but it showed other things like the muscles around my pelvis that were having troubles, and pretty much every part of me that was torn up showed problems on the voice print. The voice print just looking like a very elaborate graph on the computer, but it was surprising.
Well, some of the things you didn't tell us about, like you had a problem with your toe, and that showed up, and you hadn't told us. And you were so looking at that vocal print. Was that a surprise to you? Did that make you a little more of a believer?
Yeah, when it showed up, things that all of my shoulder I'd had. From playing so much tennis, I had rotator cuff problems and muscle problems around my shoulder, and a lot of those things showed up that there would have been no reason for anybody to have guessed about. And I want to get in later about the toggling thing too, if we can, which I find most amazing, but Sherry will lead into that.
I think we have time for that. So when you were looking at relief of pain, and somebody, I just had to sneak it and put it on for you. And the way I got it was I have this knack of high-frequency hearing, and that's been substantiated through a lot of military and university testing of my ears. I hear differently, and therefore my voice is kind of different, and I can duplicate what I'm hearing. And that's how all of this started, a very esoteric perspective. And now I can hear that, and we've got machines that can tell me what the sound is, and then I just go put them on this laboratory equipment that we call a self-management auditory device, a SMAD, and that's what I used on you when you came up to the house. So relief of pain, and then the fact that the computer program could show you or us what was really going on. And we did a complete program. You used headphones with it. And what began to happen?
Well, first off, my pain started going away, and I was able to sleep. But Sherry put on sounds for my pelvis. Basically, my butt was broken, and that caused me tremendous pain. Where every night I was taking very strong pain pills. I mean, for years, every night I was taking strong pain pills, and they still didn't even resolve the issues I had with pain. But the first thing I noticed was the pain went away. After the pain went away, that allowed me to start doing more and more and living a more normal, active life. I play tennis, I canoe, kayak, race sailboats. I just can't stand sitting around. So I was to where I couldn't do all the things I wanted to do. So it changed my life.
Well, what was your life like before the accident?
I lived on the water in Key Largo. I fished and played tennis almost every day. I loved to do woodwork, so I had a shop. I did a lot of work, but it all involved being on my feet all the time. And after the accident, I was pretty much wheelchair for half a year, and on a walker for a half a year, and then on crutches, and then on a cane. And when I first got to Ohio, I was still occasionally using a cane. One of the problems I had, if I even carried maybe a computer screen 10 feet, it wouldn't hurt me then, but then the next day I couldn't walk. And when I started listening to the sounds, I found that I could start doing things and not having the penalty of having pain an hour later. I mean, pain that kept me completely off of my feet, where I was hopping on one foot.
When you were in Key Largo and you had your own ship and you took people out fishing, you certainly couldn't do that anymore with a bum leg. You wouldn't have been able to be stable in a boat.
Well, one day, I don't think I've ever told Sherry this, the kind of things I do, but anyway, one day I went out on my boat, happened to be over at my mom and dad's house. My dad moved my boat over there so that I wouldn't be using it, and my mom looked out the window, and I was getting on my bone fishing boat on a walker, and I was standing on a walker driving the boat, and I was going out by myself. And but that's the kind of thing that when those things get taken away from you, where you have to adapt, it was just hard to adapt everything. And just to say this now, I am after, well, it probably took about 2.5 years to recover completely. I now play tennis. I do everything I could ever do before. The sounds really took me 6 months till I started seeing really major recovery. I mean, in a few days, I started noticing pain going away. I had been so long without walking, 5 years without walking properly and without having any feeling in my foot, and that it took quite a while for me to fully recover. But it was a gentle progression that went on for a couple of years. It was very fast at first, and then it gets that law of diminishing returns. But I still recovered completely. I was probably 50% better in 6 months, and I was 90% better in a year. And then the other 10% maybe took another year of just exercising those muscles and such. But I played the sounds for probably 2 years.
Didn't you also have some rehab after your operations?
I had standard physical therapy, and that got me, I don't know if it really got me anywhere. It got me where I could walk on a cane. I think that was just a normal progression of things, where if they told me to be in a wheelchair, I was on a walker, and if they told me to be on a walker, I was on crutches. I was very motivated to get myself better. But at a certain point, before I met Sherry, I had already resigned myself to the fact that I was, which in effect wasn't a fact, I thought it was a fact, but resigned myself to the fact that I wasn't going to get any better, as good as I was going to get. I was lucky to be alive and lucky to have a leg. And so,
weren't you on a lot of medications too?
Yes, I was taking a lot of Percocets for pain, and Tylenol with codeine, and those alone aren't good for you. So not only now can I walk, but I'm off all those off all the pain pills.
How did this affect your profession as an attorney?
Well, it totally wiped out I was laid up for a whole year. I was what's called an admiralty attorney. I worked with cargo ships, and my law practice was a word-of-mouth law practice. I had a very, very good law practice. It required a lot of travel. It required a lot of going to ships and climbing up and down in ships and looking at damaged cargo and talking to the captains. There was no way I could get on and off a ship up and down a gangplank, and the cargo ships don't have gangplanks that you can roll wheelchairs up. So I pretty much lost my law practice and just retired from that.
What did your leg look like? Well, what did your leg look like at the end of your rehab, and what does it look like now?
Well, at first, shortly after, I had quite a few operations, and say after the last operation, my leg looked like this is between the knee and the ankle. If you took an extra large football and sewed it onto the outside of my leg and made it all awful looking, that's jellyish masses of useless flesh, basically, really horrible looking. And my leg doesn't look great now, but when I met Sherry, obviously the healing was done, the skin healing I had, there was, you know, I was, the look, my leg, the skin looked normal, but I still had lots of swelling, lots of fluid. If you touch my leg with your finger, it would send ripples through. It was kind of like jello, and it was still half the size of a football, so it was pretty bad.
For those of you who want to see pictures of Bob's leg, we have some of those and some pictures of him playing tennis also, so you can see how these muscles went from being just flabby and laying there to actually acting like they were muscles. You can go to our website, vocalprofiling.com, VocalProfiling.com. Bob, there's been a lot of international interest about your case. There's been a couple of documentaries. Can you talk about those?
Now, Discovery Channel, Australia and Japan. Excuse me. Discovery Channel, Australia, and Japan have both sent film crews over and done shows about my recovery and Sherry's sound and how it was used. The local PBS station has done a series of shows about Sherry, of which there's a small part about my leg. But there's a lot of publicity. But one of the things I may that Sherry's wanting to talk about, like I said, back to the theme a little bit, she wanted to talk about credibility, and I gave almost no credibility to this technique, and it's very hard for people to believe in something that's new and that they've not heard of before and that's unusual and unbelievable. And I've told people, I go, well, what about, say, DNA testing 20 years ago? If somebody said they could take a piece of hair from you and tell you you were related to Abraham Lincoln, you would have said, yeah, sure, that's really sounds too remarkable to be true. And I'm sure those people went through some of the same problems that are happening with Sherry. You know, we tend to not believe something that we're not familiar with. So,
well, you've been on the PBS documentary, and I want to talk about the stairs incident here in a second. But you have a mother very close to you, and she lives near you, and you have a girlfriend. Can you talk a little bit about their skepticism, even though they saw you go through this?
Yeah, my mom, I'm sure. Well, I've asked her. She has had problems, medical problems. I go, well, why don't you go over and see Sherry? Oh, that's okay. I just don't want to do that. So even though they saw me have this amazing recovery, nothing changed. Years went by, 5 years went by that I didn't recover, and then within 1 year I did recover, and they still are skeptical, and they still refuse to even try this. And like I said, the thing is, there's no pain involved. There's only listening to pleasant sounds. So I tell people, what do they got to lose? The worst thing that could happen is it wouldn't work for them.
One of the things I noticed when I first saw you is you did not trust your own leg. You wouldn't use it to lean on. You wouldn't use it to go upstairs. You wouldn't use it in tennis to push off. Is that just because of the operation or the pain, or why did you have that issue?
Well, there was pain involved, but mostly pain wasn't when I did something. If I tried to walk on that leg, it didn't hurt then. It would just be such pain that I would have to pay for later. But when my femur was broken, the tibia and fibula were broken, they're fused together now, such massive reconstruction, I was just really scared to even walk on that leg. And I really felt that it wasn't strong, that even though it looked like it was put together, it really wasn't. There was a time I really had, some years after I had the accident, before I met Sherry, that I really was questioning my decision to stop them from cutting my leg off, because I think I would have been better off with an artificial leg.
Are you in any pain now?
No, I can do anything now. I run and jump and play tennis and do everything that I would ever do. I go out in the woods and hike, and I race small sailboats, which requires a lot of jumping from side to side, and carry kayaks around by myself. I do everything I could ever have done before.
One incident I want to share with people, because it told me the point where you begin to trust your leg. We're in a two-story building, and usually Bob will come to where I am because I'm constantly busy. And he called me on the intercom and asked me to come downstairs to his office. I thought that was really unusual. So I did, came down to his office, and he met me at the bottom of the stairs. And I thought that was kind of unusual, but okay. And he took off running up the stairs, two at a time. I was in a state of amazement, disbelief. Even though I had watched his progress, I still had a hard time believing that he could do that. When you talk to your friends that you knew before, or your doctor, or your mother, do they see a difference in you and what you can do? I mean, I certainly see it on the tennis court.
Yes, my mom has me mowing her yard now. That's what I got out. That's what my mom got out of this. But she still, even though people see that nothing changed about that, they still have a problem believing that this could happen. They go, well, you were just going to get better anyway. Maybe there was just a 5-year lapse and you got better anyway. People have trouble changing their belief status. They want to maintain the beliefs they have rather than change them. It's easier to stay the same. So it's very, very, very...
It's hard for people to believe, because there is a law of rehabilitation about this. You weren't supposed to get better.
Right.
Have you talked to any of your doctors?
No, I haven't gone back. I haven't been back. My doctors were all in Miami, and I haven't been back to Miami since this has happened. I've sent them a couple emails and have really received nothing back. They're busy, but I'm sure they would be skeptical, too. They probably would say, oh, you were going to get better anyway. But I do have another little note that I want to make, that even though this happened to me, it's still hard to believe. You go, how can all this happen? How can this be this way? And you always want to reinforce your beliefs. So I came, after this happened with Sherry, I came to start helping her. She had some intellectual property lawsuits, and I got involved with legal consulting, and then later with some engineering issues. That's what she was talking about, me going up the stairs. I have a small office within Sherry's building, and I'm here a few days a week for consulting and such. But do you mind if I get into the Tylenol? I mean, the toluene thing? Or?
Well, I want you to talk about that, but I want to ask you two questions before. Was there one pivotal point where you decided to be cooperative with the sound therapy that we were doing on you? I mean, made you keep coming back, or was it a conscious decision, or did it just happen?
Well, when I started seeing the reduction in pain, more the reduction in pain from my broken pelvis, that was actually more critical in my life than walking. I mean, if you can imagine, when you have intense pain, that is more consuming than not being able to walk. I could work around not being able to walk, but I couldn't work around having this horrible pain and not sleeping. And so when I started listening to the sounds for my leg and sounds for my broken pelvis and my lower back, I started noticing the pain going away. And that alone allowed me to do a whole lot more, to be a lot more physical and start walking and doing exercises and going up and down hills and on the trail to being more normal.
Is it your own experience that caused you to become involved with us and help us with some of these issues that we had? Because this, we never really started this business as a business. It just sort of took off and did its own thing, and we had to deal with problems that we certainly didn't know how to deal with, as just somebody singing and looking at a computer and dealing with computer programs. When we got out of the world, we got slapped down a few times because we were doing things that were outside of normal medicine. People that really didn't know how to deal with it. You've been here, you've experienced what goes on, and you've seen other people. But it was there one point that caused you to want to help us?
Well, when pain was taken out of my life, I wanted to help. I wanted to see this progress, and I could see that there were people either on one hand trying to keep you from being able to do this and getting it out to the world. They're whenever anything new. When light bulbs came out, the candle makers didn't like it. So that's, if the sound comes out, if you can help people with sound, the drug people might not like it. Although I think the day will come when they're selling you sounds and you'll be able to download sounds instead of taking a pill. But
yours is just one case, but you've seen many others here, like Dr. Rudy that we plan to have on in a few weeks. His was a very similar case to yours, wasn't it? So it's not just a single thing that happened to you.
No, I'm here two or three days a week usually, and I see people come in and out. I've seen all kinds of people. Well, the Dr. Rudy that she's talking about came in and I think he was on a scooter maybe the first time I saw him, and he went to a walker and just listening to sounds. And it's not just listening to sounds what Sherry does. She keeps taking prints of your voice, which show inconsistencies, let's say. I'm trying to think of the right word, but basically it tells you what's wrong with you. And she plays... she decides from what she reads out of your voice what to play back to you. So it's a listen to the voice, play a sound, listen to the voice, play a sound. And with Dr. Rudy, she's done that. Now he comes in on a cane. This is an MD that had been to the Mayo Clinic, and they didn't know what to do for him. They just said, you're going to get worse and worse. And he started coming here better and better. And I see this over and over here. Reversal. I've seen people come in here with AIDS, with their blood tests and such, and I don't know what the counts are, the technical name of the counts, but where their tests get better and better, and just
like their viral load and their T cell count.
Yeah, I've seen hundreds, maybe, or 800 different people that have had problems. I'm just one. And
for people out there who don't know how the technique works, we take a 30, 40-second sample of your voice, and we look at the frequencies and the architecture of what's called a fast Fourier transform. So it takes your voice and puts it into a computer program so that we can look at anything that's out of normal. We call it anomalous information in the voice, and we try to bring that frequencies and architecture back to the voice. In Dr. Rudy's case, he uses a cane for balance now. He doesn't need it for strength or to lean on to give him strength. It's just balance at this point, and we worked on that a couple weeks ago. The point I want to make about Dr. Rudy and you, in your case, it was self-reporting that your pain was not a problem anymore, and you didn't have to be on this medication. And that could just be your belief system. You could have just believed in us. And maybe all of it's belief. I don't know, and I really don't care if it makes people better. But in Dr. Rudy's case, he had a presumed diagnosis of MS. And his electromyograms, which is like a readout of the nerves in the muscles, showed that from the waist down, his nerves were pretty deteriorated and dead and weren't working well. He was numb from the waist down. He couldn't turn. He didn't know where his feet were. And now he's been with us about 2 years, but it took 7 months or so for us to work with him. And he's an MD. He didn't believe anything we were doing. But when we did the second set of electromyograms on him, it showed incredible increase in nerve regeneration. And he just did another one very recently, and it's showing just nearly 99.9 completed regeneration of the nerves in his legs. And that's just impossible. So we have, well, by medical standards, it's impossible. It's not impossible by what we're doing with bioacoustics. But in Bob's case, you know, who's going to believe it because he said so? But in Dr. Rudy's case, now there's a lot more people coming on board because we have the medical tests. We have the lab tests. And we've done that all along, substantiate this with lab tests and double-blind studies and personal experience and strength, increased in strength. I know in your case there's a lot more strength in your leg, and the leg looks more like a leg with strong toned muscles in it, even though it doesn't look like the other leg, I should say. But they took muscles out of your back and put them in your leg, and this stuff looks like it's trained those muscles to be leg muscles. So from this very self-reporting perspective to actual lab tests, this stuff works. And you've seen it, and I've seen it. And some of the things that you've seen here and in your own experience, and even you talking to the military about that, some of the things about toxicity and other kinds of pains that you've had, if you could talk about the toluene toxicity and how your own experience with that led you to approach the military about that.
I was in the office one day, and Sherry wanted to take a voice print. Either she perceived that I had maybe was limping or was stiff or something, or maybe she just wanted to set some equipment. I don't know. But she did a voice print, and afterwards she said, "You have toluene in your system." I said, "Well, I don't think toluene is a normal thing to have in one system." And she said, "No, I don't think so either. I knew it was some type of solvent." And I just go, "Well, okay, you know, it's we wonder why that voice print said that." I said before, I do woodworking as a side business and as a hobby, and I have for years. I went home that evening and looked at a can of oil that I had been rubbing onto a wood project as a finish. I looked at the can. I go, "Well, I just want to read what's in that." And I looked at the can, and it said toluene. It was toluene based. So the night before, I had been pouring this stuff on a rag and rubbing it into wood, and probably absorbing it through my skin and breathing the fumes. And it showed up the very next day in a voice print. So I approached Sherry about approaching the military for possible use as a chemical biological early detection system, and we've talked to the Army about that, and we're going to be talking to them again next month about that. So it's pretty incredible. I said, well, if you'd have said you have pizza in your system, I probably would have not been so astounded, but coming up with something like toluene, it just shows how accurate these things can be, and how Sherry would have to tell you how she knew it was toluene.
Because you had a very large spike in your vocal print, and it had the architecture of a toxin, and were able to look at that. I didn't know what toluene was. And actually, when I did that vocal print and asked you about it, you denied it. You said, well, I've not been around anything like that. And you were very skeptical even then, after all of this other stuff that was going on. You've seen things here that are diagnostic at the same time. For instance, your foot problem that you had. Can you talk about that?
That's another one, too. That shows, as I said, the pain. It took not long to take the pain away. It took quite a while to, obviously, I guess maybe it's not obvious, but playing a sound isn't going to instantly change the muscle form of my leg and make it go from being a mess to okay in one day. But I have always had a problem with pain in the ball of my foot before my accident and since I was a teenager. And Sherry did a voice print. I mentioned that one day, and I was limping maybe, and she did a voice print, and she said, well, it's a form of gout. And I always said, nobody wants to have gout. It just sounds like something awful. But that's what it was. It just felt like somebody hit me with a hammer on the ball of my foot, and it just makes it painful to walk. So she put a sound on, and within a few minutes, the pain was gone. And after that, once again that happened, I had the pain. I said, well, how about if you put the gout sound on? Next time she did it, it took about a minute. And then we started playing with it, and one I was kind of hoping my foot would hurt so I could go in and try it. And one day, well, actually, I went in the office. She said, you look like you're limping. And I go, I don't have time. I've got to call this person back. You know, the pain's not that bad. We'll just let it go. And she put the sound on. And by the time I got to her outside door of her office, the pain was gone. And so...
Didn't we count like 6 seconds?
Yeah, I think that was 6 or 7 seconds. So then I said, well, this is really getting incredible. We've got this down to a few seconds now. And I stood there. The next time I had this pain, I stood there, we put the sound on, and it was like 3 or 4 seconds, and the pain went away. It was almost an instant cure. And it works that way with aspirin for me. I always have had problems with earaches and sore throats, and we were doing kayaking practice in the pool over at Ohio University, and I went out in the winter and got an ear infection. Sherry and I were having a meeting about a legal problem in the evening. I told her I had to go home, that I was not able to concentrate, that my ear was starting to hurt. Well, actually, I asked for aspirin. She said she didn't know of any aspirin in the office. I said, well, I have to go home. So she goes, well, let me try a sound that would emulate aspirin. And I said, okay, you can do that, but I'm going to head home. I'll put headphones on and listen on the way home. We're on a part of a university campus, and our office is way back in the back in a park area, and it's about 5 minutes out to the front gate. So I got in my car, put the headphones on, drove out to the front gate, called Sherry on the cell phone and said, my ear is okay, it's just numb. If I take 2 or 3 aspirin for an earache, it within 5 or 10 minutes usually just turns it to numb. It's very effective for me. But her sound did the exact same thing as if I'd taken 2 or 3 aspirin. So, and that's part of what the research goes on here, is finding out why some of these things work very quickly and why some of them take longer, and it's just an ongoing process. Some things for me, like the gout, work in a few seconds. The aspirin works in a few minutes, and we've done a lot of research on back pain. That's something I've been involved in here. We have people that have found that back pain in 10 to 15 minutes of listening to specific sounds for lower and middle back pain. I've been involved a little bit in the study at Ohio University, and I personally saw over 30 people and doing a double-blind study, 95% of the subjects experienced an average of 50% improvement in back pain by listening to a generic. Now, this is generic. Most of the things Sherry's done for me are fine-tuned specifically, but listening to what we found to be back frequencies that tend to work across the board for most people. But 95% of the people tested had an average of 50% improvement. Some had 100% improvement. Some had a 20% improvement. But that's quite a statistic.
It was your background in psychology that helped us develop that project, and then one of the doctors at the university and a couple of chiropractors have helped us go ahead and test it. And we're looking at relief of just ordinary back pain, and something like 60% of adults experience back pain at some time in your life. So developing this product, Little Back Box, is really our way of helping move the public into a place of trusting what we do, because it takes away the pain. And they don't really care how we're doing it and all the research that we did. They just care that the pain's gone. So this is one of our first steps into the public with a product based on our research. Didn't you, you helped us also do a fibromyalgia study, and you were one of the guinea pigs in that on one of the days when you'd worked really hard. I think you were cutting lumber or something. I can't remember. And you came in with really sore muscles. Can you talk about that experience and how quickly that helped you with relief pain? I think Dr. Rudy was there that day. We were testing him and you walked in.
Yeah, it was what had happened. I played tennis 3 hours the night before, and I came in and I was very stiff, and Sherry picked up on that. I was just walking stiff, nothing to do with my leg. I can't call it my bad leg anymore because it's not even bad. It just looks bad. But I was real stiff, and Sherry took a quick voice print, put on some sounds, and it took away probably 80% of my stiffness. I'm 57 years old now, and 3 hours of tennis, and I was playing with a 20-something year old, and then I pay for about 3 days. So I'm assuming that her fibromyalgia muscle studies were where part of the frequencies came from for this. But the potential for some of these things for professional sports teams and such could be tremendous. And I don't. What Sherry's talking about, the Little Back Box, is I've been involved in. We decided that we needed to bring a product to the commercial market here, and we've created a sound producing device that you listen to with headphones that has these generic back sounds in it, and that can be purchased, I think, on our internet site. If not, people can call the office. But that's been very, very successful in reducing back pain in almost everybody that's used it.
Well, sometimes when we do demonstrations in public, people fight us over it. They don't want to give it back. So these two are kind of similar, and there are first steps. You talked about sports teams. How do you think this would help sports teams?
Well, one, predictive. I know one time I came in and you said, well, I see something in your shoulder and it looks like you're going to have a shoulder problem. Now, this is not telling the future. This is if I don't do something about it. In other words, my shoulder problem has apparently already started. This is not, you can't say, listen to a sound and say you're going to break your leg, but to listen to a sound, if something has already started in your body, this can be picked up at an early stage. Maybe a pro baseball team could decide whether a pitcher should go ahead and pitch today, even though he has a little bit of a sore arm. We could determine how far along that's going to go. Whether to put somebody in, whether a muscle is really healed or not, or just predicting what is already started but is invisible to any other analyzation technique. In other words, you can't take an x-ray of your shoulder muscle and tell you that it's a little bit sore and it's going to get real sore unless you rest it for a while.
Have you seen, and I know you have, so I'm just asking this question as an audience member, have you seen the sounds used to make muscles weak and strong?
Well, one day I think one of the people a man came in the office and he couldn't move his leg. He sat in a chair and he couldn't lift his leg up and down. And we had some type of device that tests, you hold it against a person's leg and it tests how hard they're able to push against it, against their arm, against their leg, basically like a scale that you push against. So anyway, he could only push up to, say, 2 pounds, and then Sherry played a sound, and he could push 3 pounds, and she played a sound, and he could push 4 pounds. And you could go, well, maybe he's just loosening it up. And then she played another sound that took him back to 2 pounds, and then played another sound, took him back to 4 pounds. So that was pretty interesting.
One of the projects I want to do is work with the space program so that we can exercise muscles in weightless conditions and maybe keep people in better condition while they're in space because the muscles atrophy. When we're looking at a sound box, and so there's two parts to this. One, we give you sound and see what's going to happen, but that predictive part of muscles also comes from the computer programs that we have available to the public. And there's other sort of predictive diagnostic computer programs, like we can look at potential heart disease or if there's heart damage. We can look at if people are going to have eye problems or risk factors for vaccinations. So this runs the gamut from looking at the problem, providing a sound, and then following them up based on what people have or based on a group of people who have Parkinson's. So we're being able to produce these programs, and we hope to get them online so this is available to the public. Can you talk just a little bit about this sort of alligator bite box that you guys took on your trip?
Well, I kayak, and Sherry's husband kayaks, so I decided to take him down to Central Florida, and we have Sherry said she would put together a set of sounds for us for bee sting, and this is an Ocala National Forest. I ended up in the hospital once there from a spider bite. I ended up in the hospital there once by touching poison berries and then touching my face. And just one of those dangerous, jungly areas. And we go kayaking, and that's not inherently dangerous. Just a lot of wild stuff. They have poison wood trees and the tropical, those kind of things. So Sherry put together a tone box for us that she called Sonic Apothecary and had aspirin sounds, snake bite sounds, anaphylactic shock. I was just teasing her about she needed to invent an alligator sound, alligator bite sound, because that's what we really needed.
So you're helping us develop all of these products, and one of them we do want to develop is, well, most people who have allergies know about the EpiPen that you need to take a shot, but we want to develop one because we know a frequency that will allow people to come out of that kind of allergic reaction. And we've tested it not in any kind of controlled conditions, but most of it has been in conditions, real life bee stings and peanut butter allergies that we've tested. Well, as usual, our time has been too short, way too short. And I want to, Bob says he has one more thing. Go on.
I was very started out with the person saying that sound couldn't reduce your taxes with the IRS. But we do have a 501c3 not-for-profit corporation. So if that person would call back, I'll tell him how to help reduce his taxes with sound. Okay?
That's great. We want to develop products for self-help to provide you the opportunity to have dominion over your own health. And one of those things is the PrevEC program. Just like there's a lot of complaints and there's a lot of issues. We had someone last week that talked about vaccinations and forced vaccinations, which I think is criminal, but I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying that. So instead of just complaining about what's going on in the world, we would like to help. So if any of you out there have children that are about to get vaccinations or have already had vaccinations and you suspect damage, please get in touch with us. Soundhealth@soundhealth.org is our email, 740-698-9119 is our phone number. And we want to partner with people who want to help us get this to the public.
Listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.